Hey, I'm Johanna Wagstaff.
And hi there, I'm Rohith Joseph.
And we're asking for 10 minutes of your day to go through the 10 things that the UN recommends we can all do when it comes to climate change.
Please don't leave.
No.
And also, the things aren't new.
We are just wired to not do them.
We promise you to help you figure out your brains, and you and your people can make better choices to combat climate change.
10 Minutes to Save the Planet is available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
This is World Report. Good morning, I'm Helen Mann. CBC News has confirmed the federal government and Honda are expected to announce a new electric vehicle agreement this week. The Japanese carmaker is expected to make a multi-billion dollar commitment to build new facilities that process cathode active materials, build batteries, and assemble battery-powered vehicles. As Bloomberg first reported, the announcement is expected to be made this Thursday in Alliston, Ontario. In New York.
These are all Biden trials. This is done as election interference. Everybody knows it, and it's very unfair.
Donald Trump speaking briefly on his way into a Manhattan courtroom. Opening arguments are being delivered today in the case of hush money that was paid to an adult film star. The former U.S. president is accused of trying to cover up the transactions.
This is a pretty straightforward case factually, which is business fraud.
Former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin laying out the case there. Prosecutors say Trump tried to hide payments made to actress Stormy Daniels during the 2016 election campaign. Alvin Bragg is the New York District Attorney. His office filed the charges.
The defendant repeatedly made false statements to cover up crimes relating to the 2016 election.
Trump has denied he had an affair with Daniels and has pleaded not guilty to 34 charges related to falsifying documents. If convicted, he could serve up to 4 years for each charge. A $95 billion U.S. military aid package is expected to be signed into law in the coming days. Congress approved the package over the weekend. It includes money for Ukraine and Israel. Getting it through the House was no small feat after months of delays and negotiations. And still, many within the Republican Party are not happy. The CBC's Richard Madden joins me now from Washington. Richard, there are renewed calls from within the Republican caucus for House Speaker Mike Johnson to resign. What can you tell us?
Yeah, the threats are growing louder from within. Some hardline Republicans want to oust the speaker from his leadership role after the House approved that foreign aid package on Saturday. Democrats helped get it across the finish line, and more Republicans voted against it than for it. This has angered some far-right Republicans who are following the lead of presumptive presidential nominee Donald Trump, who objects to any aid for Ukraine. They say Speaker Johnson has betrayed his party's base. Far-right Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene has already filed a motion to force the speaker to vacate his position, but hasn't moved on it yet. She told Fox News, the speaker's done for. Take a listen.
We're going to fight in Congress to do everything we can to stop this type of uniparty leadership. Mike Johnson's speakership is over. He needs to do the right thing to resign and allow us to move forward in a controlled process. Yeah. If he doesn't do so, he will be vacated.
Now, Speaker Johnson says he won't resign. And remember, House Republicans hold a razor-thin majority, so the speaker would need to rely on a handful of Democrats to save his job.
So when it comes to the aid package itself, what is next in the process?
Yeah, so this all now heads to the Senate, where it could hit the floor for a vote as early as today. This would unlock some $95 billion worth in foreign aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, and it's expected to pass and then signed by President Joe Biden later this week.
Richard, thank you.
Thanks.
The CBC's Richard Madden in Washington. The U.S. government is also this week expected to sanction an Israeli military unit accused of violent crimes against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. The Netzah Yehuda Battalion is made up of ultra-Orthodox Israelis. Its members are accused of being responsible for the death of an 80-year-old American-Palestinian man in 2022. This would be the first time an entire Israeli military unit has been sanctioned. As Chris Brown reports, the move comes during a wave of settler attacks in the West Bank.
The mob of Jewish settlers that rampaged through the Palestinian village of Al-Mukhayr just over a week ago burned homes and vehicles and fired their guns at Palestinians who resisted. You can see how blood spilled all over the place, Abdel Latif Abdualia told us. His 25-year-old cousin, Jihad, was shot in the head on the roof of his house, and he bled to death in front of him. Abualia says Israeli soldiers were present but didn't stop the rampage. This past weekend, other Palestinian villages were attacked, and a Palestinian ambulance driver who came to rescue victims was killed.
This is not a problem of a few bad apples. When we're talking about settler violence, we're talking about state-sanctioned, state-backed settler violence.
Omar Shakir is with Human Rights Watch.
If you want to solve the problem, you have to go after the government that's responsible for allowing this to happen.
The anticipated move by the U.S. to sanction an Israeli military unit that until recently served in the West Bank relates to events that happened more than a year ago. But Human Rights Watch says the recent shift in attitude by Israel's Western allies to impose punitive measures is an important step. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he will fight any move to punish Israel's military units. And as for the rampage in Al-Mukhayr, it was initially triggered by the death of an Israeli teenager in what its military called an act of terrorism. Overnight, it was announced a Palestinian man has been arrested and after an interrogation implicated himself. Chris Brown, CBC News, Jerusalem.
Later today, the final report from an independent review into UNRWA will be made public. The review was led by France's former foreign minister, Catherine Colonna. She investigated Israel's claim that some UN employees at its Agency for Palestinian Refugees were members of Hamas and that 12 of them were involved in the October 7th attack. Reuters and The Guardian are reporting Colonna found Israel has still not provided any evidence of its claims. We will learn more when the report becomes public this afternoon. In Alberta, First Nations patients are more likely to leave the emergency department without completing treatment than non-First Nations patients. A new study in the Canadian Medical Association Journal has been investigating why. Tashana Reid has more.
In an ideal system, we wouldn't have people having poorer outcomes based on who they are.
Racism, stereotyping, and discrimination. Just some of the reasons why First Nations patients in Alberta say they chose to leave emergency departments without receiving care or against medical advice. The findings published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. Patrick McLean of the University of Alberta is co-author.
There are cases of people saying, I was stereotyped as substance using, I was asked to speak to an addiction counselor when that wasn't appropriate, and that's why I left.
The study is a partnership with Indigenous elders, patients, and healthcare providers across Alberta. Researchers say 6.8% of First Nations ER visits end without completing treatment, compared to 3.7% of non-First Nations patients. 1 in 20 patients were hospitalized 3 days after leaving. Other reasons patients left before receiving care, transportation considerations, and perceptions that non-First Nations people were treated more quickly.
It really just kind of reinforces what we're seeing here on the ground.
Counselor Samuel Crowfoot of Siksika Nation outside of Calgary says the research isn't surprising.
We've heard allegations of people being targeted by hospital security and staff to be harassed and to be escorted off the premises. We've seen doctors just automatically assume intoxication.
Health advocates say more education and accountability is needed. Tashana Reid, CBC News, Toronto.
Canada's plastic bag ban has created some unintended problems, a proliferation of reusable bags. Some big grocers are trying to offer solutions, but as Sophia Harris reports, many environmental experts have concerns.
I think we're in the hundreds right now.
Udi Sella of Maple, Ontario, gets around 10 new reusable Walmart bags every week with his grocery delivery. So he's happy that Walmart has launched a national pilot project, which allows customers to ship their bags free of charge to a facility. There, they'll get cleaned and sent to the food bank or recycled if they're damaged.
I have signed up and I will be sending the, I don't know how many bags we have already.
Enrollment in the program is limited. Jen Barbaza, Walmart sustainability manager, says the retailer will fine-tune the details based on feedback.
Some customers have more reusable bags than maybe they need. So to help Canadians sort of get a fresh start, we've introduced this program.
Other grocers are also trying to help curb the proliferation generation of reusable bags. Sobeys and Loblaw deliver groceries in recyclable paper bags. But environmental expert Emily Alfred says paper bags require lots of energy to make. And in Walmart's case, she believes the retailer should get customers to reuse their bags.
We need to remove waste from the system entirely.
Walmart says bags sent to the food bank will get reused. Loblaw says it continues to explore more sustainable solutions. Sophia Harris, CBC News, Toronto.
And that is the latest national and international news from World Report. I'm Helen Mam. This is CBC News.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.